Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm here with Randy Fischel. I'm so excited. We're going to talk about your latest book, An Anxious Kind of Mind.
Well, Rose, I'm delighted to be here. I did figure out how this all came about, though. I think that you sat down and said, you know, we really need to do something on mental illness. Now, who do I know that's mentally ill? And I think that's how that's why I'm here. It has to be.
And the thing of it is, I would never guess, looking at you, that you had any challenges in that area.
Well, you know, it's interesting that there are two things that I usually tell people when I'm discussing this subject. Number one is that it's true that I do have a mental illness. The second thing that's important to realize is that I'm not dangerous. I'm not going to be the next Green River Killer or Charles Manson or any of that. There are a lot of people that have what I call a glitch in the thought system, and mine, it comes about by various components, and we'll talk about a few of those. Some of it's genetic, some of it's biochemical, but we'll get into it a little bit more as we go on here.
Yes, and I think anyone listening to us realizes that at times they experience a very anxious state of being. Their minds become anxious.
There's a difference between anxiety and anxiety disorders. Now, we certainly live in this age in a more anxiety-prone society, and really globally, I think there's more anxiety. In my book, An Anxious Kind of Mind, I talk a little bit about some of how anxiety is perceived around the globe, and different cultures have different expressions and idioms. One of them is called pointing the bone, and there are all kinds of different things that people do to try to assuage their anxiety. While I am an anxious person by nature, it really escalated into what is called an anxiety disorder, and there's a difference there. The anxiety disorder is classification-wise, it would be considered something that really interferes with your day-to-day life. You can't go about daily activities. It affects your vocation. It affects your relationship. It really affects everything. My particular anxiety disorders were obsessive-compulsive disorder, panic disorder, and that eventually spun into what's called agoraphobia. So we can kind of walk through some of that if you'd like.
Yes, yes. So approximately, you know, looking at the difference, approximately how many people would you say are diagnosed with this, and maybe how many have it undiagnosed?
Diagnosed, at least in the United States, there are thought to be about a total of about 40 million individuals who battle anxiety and anxiety disorders. Now, the 40 million can span quite a gamut of diagnoses. It can be something such as a phobia, getting on an airplane. I have some relatives that are uncomfortable getting on an airplane. That's considered an anxiety disorder as well. It can go to the other extreme, obsessive-compulsive disorder, which I should mention, by the way, is in the latest DSM, which is a manual that is used by professionals. I think it's number 5. Obsessive-compulsive disorder has actually been removed out of the anxiety disorders category and given its own category now. Mm. Previously, it was considered part of the anxiety disorder spectrum. Mm-hmm. I included it in my book because obsessive-compulsive disorder is so integral to mm-hmm. my situation. I felt that it was really part of a package of the anxious personality, shall we say. And so I wanted to include that. As far as undiagnosed, you know, that's really obviously kind of hard to say how many people are undiagnosed with this or that or the other thing.
It's impossible,
it's
really.
It's impossible
but take
to know,
a
I
guess.
Suppose. Now, like you said, you didn't know that I had a secret. And mm-hmm. I became somewhat expert at hiding it. And it is probably the kind of thing that many individuals with these kinds of challenges do. They become quite expert at playing really at what is a masquerade. Mm-hmm. It's not comfortable telling people that you have this kind of a situation going on in your life. It's not something that you want to put on a resume. Hey, looking down your resume here, I see you have a mental illness. Let's go for this. You just don't do that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So how many people really are afflicted by anxiety disorders per se? I would say is probably, at least in this country, probably between 30 and 40 million. And again, it varies depending on severity.
Well, I'm talking with Randy Fischel, and we're talking about his new book, An Anxious Kind of Mind. And you can go to the website right now while you're listening to us. In fact, it's just all spelled out, ananxiouskindofmind.com. You can also get this through Amazon and all the other booksellers. And I feel honored that you're taking this time to talk about something that is quite vulnerable.
It took a long time to get here, Rose.
Maybe you should start from the beginning.
Yeah, let me back up a little bit and tell you where I first felt that something was not quite right. Growing up, I would say that I was, well, as Dr. Elaine Aron says in her book, A Highly Sensitive Person, she classifies individuals as being actually highly sensitive. Not only I'm easily offended and all that, which ironically I'm not in some ways. I became a magazine editor for a quarter of a century and learned to let quite a lot roll off my back. The earlier years in my life, however, and I'm talking second, third grade, went along, I suppose, to some degree in normal fashion until one evening I was in my upstairs bedroom. I grew up in a restored farmhouse in Michigan, and one evening, I'm thinking this must have been about third or fourth grade, I had taken on the challenge of meeting the requirements for earning a reading reward and award, I guess it would be called. And one of the books that I had to read was a book called Nyla and the White Crocodile. Some people will know that name. Others it will be unfamiliar to. I didn't think that it would be such a challenge to get through reading that book. It was about a princess in Africa and some of her experiences. But that particular Saturday night, I can still, in my mind's eye, I can kind of hear the theme to a TV show called Secret Agent. Secret Agent Man. Johnny Rivers used to sing that. And that was probably on the TV downstairs that Saturday night. And I was upstairs in that bedroom trying to get through a few pages of the book, and I began to realize that it was taking a lot longer than it should. I would read a line, and then I would go back and read it again, still unconvinced that I had read it properly. Mm. I went back and read it again and again and again. And by the time an hour or two went by, I had only read three or four pages. Looking back at that experience, I realize now that that was symptomatic of an obsessive-compulsive outcome. And being raised in a fine Christian home, that actually played a complicating role. Mm-hmm. And I talk about that in Chapter 4 of my book, An Anxious Kind of Mind. I wanted to be sure that if I was going to report that I had read this, that I had actually read it, and not only that I had read it, but that I had actually understood every word that I had read. And so in order to do that, and to not make God mad or not deceive my teacher or any of that stuff, super sensitive conscience me, mm-hmm. complicated by obsessive compulsive traits, well, it took me a long time to get through Nyla and the White Crocodile. Now, the next, let me just segue into the next very memorable experience with anxiety disorder, with the obsessive compulsive disorder. And that, again, took place in a school setting. By now, it was seventh grade, and this had come and gone, kind of the anxious personality traits had come and gone. But by the time seventh grade came along, one day we were walking, we had to walk across quite a little distance, maybe a third of a mile. Maybe about a third of a mile to get to our shop class from our regular school to our shop building. There was a sidewalk leading there. We went into shop class that day, and undoubtedly the instructor earned every cent of his pay trying to teach us how to saw a board in half. But it was on the way back that I began to notice something unusual taking place in my mind. As I walked along, I began counting each step that I took. 1, 2, 3, 28, 29, 59, 60, left, right. When I got back to the main school building, I was beginning to feel a little sense of panic. And the panic was rooted in this. What if I could never stop counting my steps? It was a terrifying thought, Rose. That was when I really began to understand that there were certain things going on in my mind that I couldn't control. Again, not any kind of... And so this sense of panic about what if I can't control my steps, what if I really have to face the rest of my life engaged mentally in doing things that I had no control over. And that really kind of began to cause me to pay more and more attention, a downward spiral. Well, if I can't stop counting my steps, are there other things I won't be able to stop doing? Mm-hmm. And so that's how the spiral downward into this OCD thing began.
Yes. Well, we're going to take a break right here. I'm talking with Randy Fischel about his book, An Anxious Kind of Mind. And you can go to his website, ananxiouskindofmind.com, to learn more. We'll be right back.
Here's Randy Fischel, author of An Anxious Kind of Mind, with another tip to help you rise above anxiety.
If you've ever had a panic attack, you probably thought you were either dying or going crazy. Whatever was happening, it had to be life-threatening. Well, not so much. It turns out that most panic attacks are self-limiting. As unpleasant, okay, horrible feeling as they are, panic attacks aren't dangerous. All that extra carbon dioxide and adrenaline coursing through your system is just your body's way of ramping up for the worst. But the truth is, the worst isn't going to happen. It's easy to share the truth about panic attacks, but that doesn't explain why you're experiencing them. For that, you really need to seek professional help. I'm glad I did, and you will be too.
You've been listening to Homeschool Companion. You know, we'd love to hear from you. Be sure and like us on Facebook at Homeschool Companion, or partner with us. Send us a contribution or a show suggestion at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783, or call us at 301-824-3162.
Poppy, when are we going to get through this jungle?
Don't. No.
Poppy, what was that?
I don't know, but I will check through the binoculars. Oh, my joy, it is a hippopotamus.
Oh, Poppy, let me see.
This clap is around my neck.
Herbie the Hippo, an I Can Read Animal Story. Check us out at homeschoolcompanion.org. That's all one word, homeschoolcompanion.org.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and I'm here with Randy Fischel, and we're talking about his latest book called An Anxious Kind of Mind and what he went through. And I think my question is, just before the break, you were telling about when you first were cognizant of that, hey, you know, you're counting your steps. Can you count all your steps and feeling anxious about that? I just know that there's some parent going, how can I help my child? Because I'm sure we're going to learn that you really, if you had had help then, you could have really circumvented some of the experiences that you had later on.
Well, that's the beauty of living in today's world. When this was happening to me, first of all, the diagnosis of OCD, or any anxiety disorder for that matter, was difficult to make by, shall we say, the average professional, meaning a family doctor, the people that we turn to in these kinds of situations for help. There were not the specialists in the magnitude that there are today. We have a lot of opportunities to get help. In my book, of course, I talk about the upsides and the downsides of medication And I want to get into that a little bit because that was a turning point for me. The gift of modern medicine came to me in a very, in my experience, a rather dramatic way. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But as far as someone out there right now listening, whose child, who they themselves know that their child is going through some of these things. The first thing I want to say, and I want to repeat this and repeat it and repeat it, is there is hope and there is a solution. It can be addressed. And I do not want to leave this microphone without making that message clear. Now, there are many ways to address it, and medication is only one of them. Actually, the most powerful combination for anxiety disorders in general is a combination of medication and what's called cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. Basically, that means that you're addressing the biochemical side and the psychological side. And that's a powerful combination and something that we're learning more and more about. Today, there are medications that are much, much, I will say, safer. Yeah, every medication has side effects, and long-term effects, frankly, are not known on some of these medications. But when I opted to include that in my recovery protocol, I decided I had to make a trade-off. I'm going to have to take a gamble here. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just have to step out and realize, am I going to go through the rest of my life without taking that kind of a risk, never knowing what my life could have become? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to step out and take that risk and allow God and others to see, to involve themselves, frankly, in supporting this recovery system? For me, it was a no-brainer eventually. Now, yes. I'm here to tell you that didn't happen quickly.
Yeah, so a parent who is seeing their child with OCD tendencies, what could they do? I mean, I tell parents if a child just likes their toys to be neat, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they are OCD, but when you see them crying about it or stressing out about it, I mean, how did your parents react?
Well, they did the best they could. I will tell you that my father passed away about a year and a half ago, and he went to his grave never knowing what I had experienced in full. Let me give you a little I'll get back to this thing about what can you do. First of all, the first and most vital thing that any parent needs to do is contact the right professional. Mm-hmm. This is not something that you're going to think your way out of. You're not going to quote fix your child. If this is a true obsessive compulsive situation, this is not going to be something that doing behavior modification techniques are not the ultimate solution, in my opinion.
Now, well, and they can actually make it worse.
They can.
You have parents that, if you're going to cry, I'm going to give you something to cry about. Right. You know, that kind of attitude doesn't help. It just increases the anxiousness in that child.
Well, not only anxiousness, but guilt and shame. Guilt and shame are part and parcel of this whole thing. I knew that I wasn't quite normal. Now we all know people who are different in different ways. But in the case of an anxiety disorder, you already question how you fit in to not only society, but to your peer group, to your classmates. I sometimes wondered, why didn't I like to go to birthday parties? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm the kind of person that I don't particularly, I'm not energized by socializing, never have been, never will be. But there was something more there going on. There's a certain sensitivity, a certain anxiety involved in all of that. That, as I mentioned earlier, it affects your relationships. And that's true even in childhood. This thing can affect your relationships. As far as what did my parents know? What did they do? Of course, they took me to the family doctor. They realized that this kid is not quite what we envision to be engaging properly in life. And so they did the best they could at that time. I remember one doctor asking me questions that were appropriate questions for a doctor to ask. I'm talking a medical doctor, a family physician. And yet, there, looking back, I realized there was no chance in the world that he would make a proper diagnosis based mm-hmm. on that line of questioning. Mm-hmm. And that's why I get back to this, what can a parent do? That's why it's so important to find the right kind of clinical help. Mm-hmm. Now, in my experience, the most help for me came from, first of all, a psychiatrist, and that was the most difficult phone call I ever made in my life. It happened 30 years later than it should have, but at least it happened. Mm-hmm. Very difficult, but I realized, literally, it was now or never. Mm-hmm. Enough time had gone by, and as I mentioned in my book, An Anxious mm-hmm. Kind of Mind, so much time had gone by and so many opportunities had been missed that there came a point in my life where it was now or never. One of the main reasons I wrote this book, Rose, is to help people to not have to miss so mm-hmm. much of their life.
Yes.
I look back at those years, and I call them the missing years. Yeah, I believe God was there the whole time and working in my life. I think there were opportunities, however, that were probably bypassed because I was simply too anxious mm-hmm. to pursue them.
Yes. Well, I think of the adolescent era, and I really believe that children who have this are more susceptible to self-medicating through alcohol, yes. drugs. And so it really, you probably were saved maybe by a conservative family in that respect.
Yes, I believe I was.
But it still will help parents know. And don't we serve a wonderful Savior who knows everything, who knows exactly. So I've worked with families who maybe one of their children committed suicide. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, God knows. He knows what that child was going through that you might not know. So we can live in peace knowing that our Savior knows every cell, every mm-hmm. molecular,
yeah,
everything about us, and he loves us just the way we are.
Yeah, and you know what I like to think of it in this way, Rose. I believe that God is more concerned with redemption than prevention. That's mm-hmm. that's what I say. Some bad things are going to happen. Some bad things happened to me, but God knew that, like you said, he knew the molecular structure of my anxious mind. And so I believe that he involved himself. Now, I'm not here to say that the only way anybody is ever going to find any help for their OCD, and we haven't even gotten into panic or agoraphobia.
Yes, yes.
I'm not saying that God is going to prevent all of this stuff, but I firmly believe that he is there working in your life in ways that maybe without him in your life would be, shall we say, a little less pointed, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I think God can bring things into our lives when we're open to him mm-hmm. that maybe he chooses, allows us to go a different direction if yes. he's not involved.
Yes. Well, we've come to the end of our show. We just have to have you here for another show. That's all there is to it.
Okay.
And I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.